This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Here tonight, that one with the principle of which is very important, and some of which one's not really used and accustomed. The Medrash says in the first parasha of Medrash Eicho, "Matzinu shesilukon shel tzadikim koshe lifnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu yoseh mimeya teichochos chasos shtayim shebemishnah Torah umichurban beis hamikdash." We find that the removal of tzadikim is harder for the Ribbono Shel Olam. He finds it more difficult, more unpleasant than the 98 curses in Dvorim and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. In this week's Sedra we had a lot of curses and they weren't very pleasant things. But what happens if we don't keep the Torah as we need to? You'll be cursed in the city, you'll be cursed in the field, your produce will be cursed, and the children will be cursed, and you'll be cursed when you come and when you go out. You'll have all sorts of terrible diseases and afflictions, and the heavens won't give forth rain, and the earth will be dusty and dry. God will give us before our enemies, and the birds will eat our flesh. And so it's terrible curses, one after the other. It's the most terrible, frightening series of events that are recorded as being bound to occur if we don't keep to the Torah as we should. And as severe as all these curses are, and as terrible and as unpleasant as they are, and you can imagine how terrible it is for the Ribbono Shel Olam to bring even one of these curses into reality, to apply even one of these terrible things to his people, you can imagine how difficult it is for him to apply two or three or four, and certainly to apply them all. And the destruction of the temple, we know also how terrible that was, and how difficult it was for the Ribbono Shel Olam, so to say, and to what extent he mourns the destruction of the temple till today. And yet the Medrash tells us that the removal of tzaddikim is more difficult, is harder for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Much worse than the 98 curses in the parasha, umichurban Beis HaMikdash, and worse than the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Betoichochus kesiv, in the rebukes that is written, in the curses that is written, va'aflei Hashem es makusecho, and God will make wondrous his destruction, his plagues. Uvechurban Beis HaMikdash kesiv v'teret ploim, and with the destruction of the temple it says that wonders will come down, amazing things. Aval besilukon shel tzadikim, but when tzadikim are removed, k'tiv, it says, v'achin ko amar Hashem. Therefore, so says Hashem, hineni yosif lahafli yesorom hazeh hafle vofele. I shall continue to amaze this people, hafle vofele, more and more amazement. So it uses the double form, the hafle vofele, which indicates the tremendous extent of the pele, of the wondrousness, of the degree that is involved in this particular destruction. The Kol Kach Lama, and why will he need such wondrousness? Why will it take so much effort? Because of the Ovda Chochmas Chachomov Uvinas Nevoinov Tistater. Because the wisdom of his wise people will be lost, and the intelligence of his intelligent people will be hidden. And that's all based on the Pasuk in Yeshayahu chapter Kaftet. Vayomer Hashem, and God said, Yan ki nigash ho'om hazeh. Since this people has made themselves high, has made themselves exalted, befiv uvisfosov kibduni, they have honored me with their mouths and with their lips, v'liboi richak mimeni, and they have distanced their hearts from me, v'atehi yir'osom oisi mitzvas anoshi melumodo, very famous posuk. And their fear of me has been mitzvah anoshi melumodo, which is a phrase which Tanakh uses to imply artificial and mitzvahs done by rote, mitzvahs done just by training, by habit, rather than by thought.
Therefore, hineni yosif lahafli yisom hazeh hafli vafele. That's the pasuk which the Midrash quoted. Therefore, I shall go on to do amazing things with this people. The avda chochmas chachomov, and the wisdom of its wise people will be lost. Uvinas nevoinov tistato,
and the intelligence, the bina of its bright people will be hidden.
That's the psukim in Yeshaya.
Why does God do something which is worse than all 98 klolos that we have today? We have 98 horrible curses recorded in today's Sedra, and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, for which we observe a Tisha B'Av. And the Ribbono Shel Olam might find himself having to do something worse than destroying the temple and worse than the 98 klolos. Why? Because of doing mitzvahs by rote. Not because people aren't doing mitzvahs at all, not because they're not serving the Ribbono Shel Olam at all, but because of mitzvahs anoshim melumado, because people are doing their mitzvahs by habitually. They're doing it by habit, they're doing it automatically, they're not doing it with any feeling. And this is something which one is aware of. As I said, it's a very famous pasuk, mitzvahs anoshim melumado. I don't think that always it is fully appreciated the extent of God's reaction against it, the extent to which the Ribbono Shel Olam reacts, that he's going to remove the chachomim, he's going to remove the wisdom of the wise people, and it pains him to do that, more than all 98 curses and more than destroying the temple, but he would do that if that's the way the people serve him. Altogether, there's some difficult things about Yiras Shamayim, two questions which Leib Chasman asks, which are amazing questions of Avraham Avinu, where the Avraham Avinu was 3 years old according to one view when he acknowledged God. He was called Avraham HaIvri, he was called an Ivri because he was on one side and everybody in the whole world was on the other side. A little boy, a young man, he stood up against the entire world and preached a philosophy which was completely unknown and rejected at the time, Avraham Avinu. He was able to do that, to recognize the Ribbono Shel Olam in a world of total idolatry. He was able to recognize and to pick out the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he goes through his trials and tribulations, one after another, one trial and a second one and a third one. He's thrown into he's told to give up his Yiddishkeit, or he'll be thrown into a furnace, and he gets thrown into the furnace. One after another, trial after trial, tribulation after tribulation, he has to leave his family, he has to go to Israel, one after another. Finally comes the tenth of all his trials. He's told to sacrifice his one and only child, to kill his child for the sake of God. And when he shows a willingness to do that, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "Ato yodati ki yorei Elokim ato. Now I know that you're a God-fearing man." And before then, God didn't know. Only that? Is that all that God, by which God could tell that he was a God-fearing man? That's amazing. That means that despite Avraham's Yiddishkeit, and having discovered that Yiddishkeit and stood for it against the whole world, there was, so to say, if a doubt in God's mind as to whether Avraham was really a firm Jew or not, what else could he have been? A meshuggah? What else could have brought him to stand up to all those 9 trials and to stand up against all the social pressure of being Jewish and to go against his family, his father, his brothers, everybody, to pack up and to move off to Israel and to teach and to preach Yiddishkeit in a most unpopular environment? And the Ribbono Shel Olam has to wait until his last trial, when Avraham is over 100 years old, and then he says, "Ato yodati, now I know that you're a frum Jew." And before? And there's a statement in the first chapter of Pirkei Avos where Antignus Ishsocha says, "Al tiyu ka'avodim ha-meshamshim es harav al-menas dekavu pras, elohevu ka'avodim ha-meshamshim es harav shilu al-menas dekavu pras." Don't be like a servant, like an employee, who works for his salary. Be like an employee who works not for his salary. You work because you take a pride in your work, that you get a salary, that's a bonus at the end of it. But that's how you've got to work with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Don't work for your reward. Work because it's the right thing to do. And then he adds a few words. V'hi meiro shamayim aleichem. And you should have yiras shamayim as well. You should be God-fearing too. Now I ask you, is it possible to serve God shalom and asla kabel pras and not to be God-fearing? Is it possible to serve God without the idea of reward in mind? So what are you serving God for? Surely because you fear Him as He is Himself. Surely because you're aware of God. Surely because you have Yiras Shamayim. Why else would you serve God? No, Antigonus says. After he says, and serve God not for any kind of reward and for any kind of benefit, but just for its own sake. And then he adds, V'hi meiro shamayim aleichem.
and have Yiras Shemayim, an additional thing on top of it. So it seems that it's possible to achieve the highest levels of religious experience and still to be in a position where your Yiras Shemayim is in question. You can be ke'avodim ha'meshamshim isharab shelo ha'menas lekabel pras. You can be like a man who's serving God not to get any reward, not for any self-improvement or for any self-justification or for any self-benefit, and yet your Yiras Shemayim can be in question. You might not have any Yiras Shemayim. You can be an Avraham Avinu who recognized God when nobody else did at 3 years old, and who served Him and preached Yiddishkeit and taught Yiddishkeit and sacrificed his life 9 times. And until you're over 100 years old, it's feasible that your Yiras Shemayim is in question. It's not clear necessarily that you have Yiras Shemayim. And that brings me back to Yeshayahu, where often people say, you'll often hear, you know, I don't want to get into the habit of just keeping the mitzvahs out of habit. I would like to feel what I'm doing. I would like to understand what I'm doing. I would like to do it with emotion and with feeling and with warmth. It's all very nice. And it's true, I suppose. Yet what is it when the famous Pasuk uses the concept of mitzvahs anoshim melumoda, of doing mitzvahs by rote and by habit? Which mitzvah does the Pasuk pick on as the prime example of a man who does mitzvahs out of habit? Vatehi yir osam oisi mitzvahs anoshim melumoda. The Yiras Shemayim, the deep inner feelings of frumkeit, are the ones which are done out of habit. He doesn't say they keep kashrus out of habit, they keep Shabbos out of habit, they daven out of habit, they put on tefillin out of habit. He doesn't say that. The Yiras Shemayim is out of habit. That's something that nobody realizes when they quote this so glibly. Understanding what is it that the people are being accused of? Of having emotions and feelings which are not genuine and which are not deep. And this brings us to the big misunderstanding of our century, of our age. And that is the feeling and the idea that if you do something with emotion, it's genuine. If you do it without emotion, it's a farce. It's true that if you do it without emotion, it's not very convincing. But it doesn't mean that if you do it with emotion, it's genuine. The chiddush that we have over here is the concept of Batehi Yir Osam Oisim Mitzvah Anoshim Melumoda. What is that habitual mitzvah for which they are being criticized? Not the physical mitzvahs, not the material mitzvahs. They're being criticized for habitual Yiras Shemayim. They're being criticized for emotions which have been acquired by rote, for emotions which have been acquired artificially, for emotions which are not deep and which are not genuine. The feasibility of an emotion which is a farce, of an emotion which is a fraud, that's the chiddush of this pasuk. And that's something that people today don't understand. If a thing is emotional and spontaneous, it means it's genuine. Not true. An emotion can be as fraudulent and as misleading as an action can be. And in fact, I'm going to show you that an emotion can be more fraudulent and more misleading than an action can be. What does an actor do? Well, an actor is taking a part in a play. How does he become convincing? He has to act with emotion. He can't just go through the motions. The director can't just tell him, you must do this and you must do that, and you must go from there to there, and you must lift up your hand, and here's the script, this is what you must say. That wouldn't work. You've got to get in the part, and you've got to believe the part, and you've got to take it seriously, and you've got to become emotionally involved with the part. You've got to become one with the part. Then the audience can be convinced. Then it looks convincing. So imagine the situation. Imagine the scene where Hamlet suddenly is realizes he's been told by his father's ghost that it's Uncle Claudius has done it all. His uncle, of all people, his own trusted uncle, is the one who murdered his father. And you get Hamlet's speech, and it develops a passion to it, and an anger, and a disgust
feeling of absolute vile disgust towards not only his uncle but anybody that type of person. And you get the famous lines where Hamlet finally says there, says, "Oh villain, villain, smiling, damned villain." And he believes every word of it. He says, "My table's meted so it should, so I should, my table's meted so should be said." And then he says that one can be, that one can smile and smile and be a villain. What a tzaddik. What a tzaddik. Look what he's realized, that one can smile and smile and be a villain, damned villain. And he realizes it and he understands it, that you can have a smiling face and you can be a villain under it all. What a tzaddik. And is he really a tzaddik, the actor who does it? At that moment he believes it and he's really filled with all that disgust and it comes out convincingly. He has the emotions of a man disgusted with deception, a man disgusted with flattery. But he, the actor, what kind of a man is he? He might be a flatterer himself, he might be a deceiver himself, who knows, who cares what he is. And there you see how in acting, the very art of acting is the ability to develop false emotions. If you act without emotions, you're not an actor. And Bilam, when he said, "Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov, mishkin lisecha Yisrael." Do you think he said it like, excuse me a moment, "Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov, mishkin lisecha Yisrael"? Put it away. He said it with passion. He said it with feeling, with emotion. "Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov." Why do you think the others got so angry with him? Because he said it as if he didn't believe it. They got angry because he believed it. Did he believe it? He didn't. It was fake devotion. It was inspired. At that moment, it was if he believed it, because he was able to inspire himself with all that emotion and with all that feeling. But that's not Bilam. Of course it's not Bilam. That's fake emotion. And we are so stupid and superficial as to think that where there's emotion, there's genuineness. And where there's no emotion, there's no genuineness. It has nothing to do with one another. It is the art of the good actor to bring all the emotion he can into the art of his deception. And the better a deceiver he is, and the greater a villain he is, the more heart and warmth there will be in his smile. And it will only be after he's finally caught murdering that a Hamlet will realize, smiling villain, that you can smile and smile and be a villain. But it's too late when that's realized. He's been trusted already. But that smile was warm, it was genuine, it was human. Otherwise everybody would have seen through it long before Hamlet's father was killed. What the Am Yisrael are criticized for is for false Yira Shamayim. When an action is false, it doesn't do any harm. Nobody believes it. It's not convincing. When an action is false, everybody sees you clowning around. Everybody sees you're an actor. And you see it yourself. You know it was false. You know it was routine. You know it was an act. You know it wasn't real. But when an emotion is false, those who are observing don't see, and you don't see yourself. You don't even know yourself that it's all an act. Because you feel it. You feel so emotional. You're so excited. You're excited because you've learned how to get excited. You're excited because you're conditioned. "My dear friend, I haven't seen you for so long, and you're really excited, and you jump off your seat and you throw your arms around him." You've trained yourself to get excited about people you haven't seen for a long time. You're told that's what you're meant to do. Does that mean it's genuine? Not necessary. What would Claudius have done if he hadn't seen Hamlet's father for a long time? He too would have jumped off his seat and thrown his arms around Hamlet's father and said, "Dear friend, how good it is to see you. Dear brother, how I've been missing you." With all the warmth and all the passion in his heart. And later on he would murder him in cold blood. The two don't contradict one another. The problem with an emotion that is false, the problem with an emotion which is mitzvah sanoshi milumodo, is that it's convincing. And it's so convincing that you yourself don't even know about it. You yourself don't know that it's acquired, that it's false, that it's conditioned. Students at Wits University who get indignant about the way the Africans are treated. Are they emotional? Of course they're emotional. Do they get heated up? Of course they get heated up. Is it genuine? Of course it's not genuine. Of course it's acquired, it's conditioned. If it was genuine, the way they would treat their parents would be different. If it was genuine, the way they treated their own African servants would be different. If it was genuine, the way they treated other Jews would be different. The students who get upset about the way the Israelis are treating the Arabs, I'm talking about the Jewish treatment, the Jewish students, is that a genuine feeling of anger? Sure it is! In the sense that they believe it's genuine. Where does it come from? It's conditioning. One can condition one's emotions. And we don't realize the extent to which our emotions are conditioned, not only our behavior. If our behavior was only conditioned, it would be a whole b'tzara. It would be no problem. It would be easy to re-educate people. Because they would know it's conditioning and so would everybody else. It's not our emotions which are conditioned. It's our emotions which are conditioned. We've been taught to feel in certain ways. We've been taught to experience certain emotions. We've been taught to react emotionally in certain ways. And that's the mitzvah anoshi melumada. That it's in the Yiras Shemayim Vata. He Yir also Moisi. Even their Yiras Shemayim is mitzvah anoshi melumada. Even their Yiras Shemayim is something which is acquired, it's something which is conditioned, it's not something which is genuine. And therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Avraham Avinu after 9 trials, Ata Yodati, now I know that you're a Yorei Shamayim. Not now you are a Yorei Shamayim. Now I know that you've been a Yorei Shamayim all the time, but it wasn't evident until now. Everything you've been doing until now could theoretically have been, despite the fact that you're not a Yorei Shamayim. So why would you do it? Because you act like a Yorei Shamayim. It could all be one big act. A very, very convincing act. That you yourself are convinced. It's only when you were told to bring your child as a sacrifice that you were at such odds with yourself, that you were in such conflicts with yourself, that was the opportunity to really test, to take away the act. At that moment you weren't acting. At that moment it was real. But that's the first time in your life that it's been for 100% real. And clearly real. And that's why Antigonus Yisroichu can say that you've got to be avodim ha-meshamshim es harav shelo amenas lekabel pras, that you should serve the Ribbono Shel Olam not for any reward and still have Yiras Shamayim. That doesn't mean that because you're going through the thing correctly and you're doing it with the right feelings, you're serving God lishmo. No reward, Ribbono Shel Olam. I don't want any olam hazeh, I don't want any olam habo, nothing. I'm doing it because it's right. What a tzaddik. But that too might be an act. And the only way you'll know, you'll never know whether it's an act. And that's why he warns it's not good enough to be operating on that level of spiritual achievement as high as it is. In addition to that, Yehi Meira Shemayim Aleichem, ensure that at all times you possess Yira Shemayim. It doesn't necessarily go hand in hand. Don't think that just because you're going through the motions of Yiddishkeit that you have the Yiras Shamayim. And more than that, don't think if you even have the emotions of Yiras Shamayim. Don't think if you feel with all the depth Yiras Shamayim. Don't be sure that it's real. It all might be conditioned. So powerful is mitzvahs anoshi melumoda. A big mistake that we make is in thinking that it is our motions that are conditioned. It's not the motions that are conditioned. It's the emotions that are conditioned. And the emotions bring about the motions later on. And therefore when we think we must have a genuine feeling and we must be responding genuinely and we must be acting and reacting genuinely because we feel it so deeply, that feeling is the same feeling as the actor has on the stage when he plays Hamlet. And he says, villain, oh villain, villain. Smiling, damned villain. And he hates that villain. Although he might be one himself. It's not tightly the satire, it doesn't contradict. He's an actor. And while he's acting, he must believe it. When it's over, then he's himself again. Whatever that means. And so it's feasible to go right through one's entire life acting. Not acting in the sense that there's a difference between my beliefs and my actions. Acting in the sense that my beliefs are an act. And that's frightening. Because how do I know when I'm on the stage and when I'm not? If it's just the actions, it's easy to know. If I'm doing things that I don't believe in, I'm an actor. I'm considered hypocritical and inconsistent. That's easy. It's easy to identify, it's easy to know. But that's not the problem. The problem is that even when I'm being consistent, even when I'm believing, even when I'm acting out of conviction, who says that conviction is genuine? Who says that conviction isn't the same conviction as Richard Burton when he's acting Hamlet. He says it isn't the same thing. At that moment, it's all full of conviction. And he is Hamlet at that moment. Who says that that's not how we are? We are tzaddik at that moment, but it's not us. We're just acting. That's the first part of the shiur. The first part of the shiur is the awareness of this, of this, which to me is a very big chiddush. That the conditioning is not only the motion, but it is the emotion. And that's a very frightening chiddush, because it leaves one in a state of complete unsureness about oneself. There's no way that one can know at any time that one is genuine. And it leads one to the understanding to be equally, if not more, suspicious of emotion than of lack of emotion. Lack of emotion, at worst, he doesn't believe what he's saying. With emotion, at worst, he thinks he believes what he's saying. And when he really comes to the test, it's not going to stand up. He professes warm friendship and he loves you with all his heart. But when it really comes to the test, it all cracks up, it all breaks. What does it mean? Was he lying at the time? No, he was acting at the time. What he said he believed with all his heart, but his belief was a conditioned belief, it wasn't real. And how many heartbreak stories are there of people who have professed their undying love and loyalty to one another, and weeks later, sometimes days later, sometimes hours later, it cracks up. And she says, but I, the fool, I believed him. And I always have to say to her, don't worry, he, the fool, believed himself too. You're not the only one who believed him. He also believed himself. When he said it, he meant it. But he, the actor, meant it. Wasn't he the real person? And it's all very well, the act can go on as long as there isn't pressure. You can carry on the stage and carry on and carry on, and Richard Burton can be Hamlet the whole evening, but comes a time when he's got to go home, he gets tired, he's got to eat. And until he has that kind of pressure, he can be acting Hamlet on and on. But there comes a time when he's pulled in two directions. And when the screws are turned on and the pressure becomes great, then the act cracks up. And the act no longer has that conviction which it genuinely had at the time. And that explains a lot of human inconsistencies. Inconsistencies where people are deliberately maneuvering and misleading, that's easy to understand. The heartbreaking situations are the situations where trust was inspired and that trust was let down. And when one looks back and one says, but why did I trust him? How was the trust inspired? He was so convincing. Why was he so convincing? Because he said it with such emotion. He said it as if he really believed it and as if he really felt it. And it's important to know that he did really believe it and he did really feel it. And I have a salesman who's selling Volkswagens, and he tells you what a wonderful car Volkswagen is, and there's no car like it, and you're busy contemplating buying a Ford, and he tells you, no, you're out of your mind. And he really believes it, and he will sit and he feels it's his sacred duty to dissuade you. He says, look, at the end, he says, look, even if you don't buy your Volkswagen from me, but do me a favor, buy a Volkswagen. You go and you buy a Volkswagen. The next day he changes jobs, now he's working for Ford. You bought a Volkswagen, what came over you? Such an idiotic thing to do. Yesterday he believed what he said, and today he believes what he said. He's a salesman, and he believes what he says. If he's a good salesman, he believes what he says. But his beliefs can change depending on the parts. Richard Burton can be Hamlet when it's Hamlet, and he can be King Lear when it's King Lear, and he's equally convincing in both roles. It's not difficult to switch and to change. That's part of the art of acting. That's part of the art of salesmanship. And we're all like that too. When we're in a situation in which we believe, no matter why we believe it, we believe in it because of the social pressure of the community in which we're living, because of the family pressure of the family in which we're living, because of our own commitment, because we've done something that has committed us along that particular line, so we believe it to make ourselves feel better. Whatever the reason is, at this moment I believe it, but that doesn't mean I can't switch like that and believe something else all of a sudden. And when one realizes this and one understands this, one looks at oneself and one just says to oneself, who on earth am I? How do I know who I am? How do I know what I would do under pressure? How do I know when I would change roles and switch from Hamlet to King Lear and back to Hamlet again? And when I wouldn't, because this is me, Richard Burton, not Hamlet and not King Lear. It's me. Go up to Hamlet on the stage and you can belt him in the stomach and Richard Burton will say, ooh, not Hamlet. That's him, that's the real man. And there comes a time when each of us can be belted in the stomach and it's we who scream, not the active part. But one needs to know who's who and what's what.
People talk about spontaneity. What does spontaneity mean? It means that an action is an expression of a belief, of an emotion. So it's honest in that sense, that there's no barrier between the emotion and the action. But spontaneity does not examine the source of the emotion. Is the emotion genuine? Or is the emotion an act? That we don't know. And that we don't care in our present society. But in Torah we do care about it. And when we're tackled on mitzvah, sanoshi, melumodo, the Torah warns us, don't be scared of keeping Shabbos out of rote. Don't be scared that wearing a yarmulke will just become a habit. Don't be scared that eating kashrus is just going to become a habit. That davening every morning at 6 o'clock is just going to become a habit. Don't be scared about that. Maybe it will become a habit. There are worse habits to get into than that. What's dangerous is when your feelings become a habit. Comes Edel time, so you start feeling worried. Comes Rosh Hashanah time, so you start feeling terrified. Comes Yom Kippur time, you start feeling completely awestruck. Just you're able to switch on and off your emotions just like that. That's when you've got to be careful. You've got to be able to be sure that those emotions are real. But one begins to wonder, what is real? So actions, you don't know. Actions can be an act. One's motions can be an act. And now we have the shattering news that even one's emotions can be an act. So one begins to ask oneself, what is real? If you can't trust a person, and let's not talk about a person, let's talk about oneself. If I cannot trust my emotions because I don't know if they're genuine, and I cannot trust my emotions because I don't know if they're genuine, so what can I trust? What is really genuine? What is definitely me? Every action has three parts to it. It's the three parts of the tefillin. It has the action, the practical, the hand. It has the heart, the emotion, and it has the intellect. It has the thought process behind it. That is invariably accurate and genuine. That's one thing that cannot be fraudulent. One's thought process cannot be a fraud. That's true. You might be able to fool others that you're thinking when you're not. Or you might be able to fool others that you're cleverer than you are. But you can't fool yourself in that a thought is not a thought. Or that a thought is not a genuine thought. That can't be. Something you've thought out is real, and it's yours, and you made it. And it's important to understand that the uniqueness of Torah lies in the amount of thought that there is behind every action. That's what makes Torah existence so different from anything else. There's nothing else really that does it. There are other religions, and there are other monotheistic religions, and there are other ways of lives and psychologies and all sorts of things. But anything that has such a tremendous weight of knowledge and of thought process and of analysis behind every little action, that there isn't in any other religion or in any other way of life. You can take Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, is one short volume that describes all the actions that a Jew is supposed to undergo throughout his life. One small little volume, a few hundred pages. And what's behind it? What's the thought and the philosophy behind it? Volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes. Endless. There can be a little action that a Jew does. And what's the thought that goes behind it? What's the knowledge that goes behind it? Endless, endless. Just depends how skilled he is at working it out, how knowledgeable he is at working it out. But endless volumes of knowledge, written and unwritten, behind every little action. There's no action that a Jew does that doesn't have this knowledge and the thought process behind it. If we look at the closing sentence in the parasha this week, Ushmartem es divrei habris hazois va'asisem oison, and you shall keep the words of this covenant and you shall do them. And we told him the Sifri, Ushmartem means learning, means Mishnah, study, and va'asisem means observing. So this balance of relationship between studying and doing, understanding that the two must go together, just studying and not doing is useless. Just doing and not studying is useless. The two have to go together. Why? Lema'an taskilu es kol asher ta'asu. So that, and he uses the word taskilu from seichel, so that you should have intelligence in all that you do. After this whole sedra of all the things to be aware of and all the things that one should do, all the curses and all the blessings. The last sentence which sums it all up is Laman Taskilu es kol asher tasim.
That what you should do with intelligence and with consciousness. Doesn't say that you should do it spontaneously. Doesn't say that you should do it with feeling. Laman Taskilu.
That there should be seichel, that there should be intelligence in that which you do. And here we come to the ultimate and to the highest form of human activity. Obviously, doing a thing out of habit and out of rote is the lowest form of human activity. Doing it spontaneously is the second lowest form of human activity. The highest form of human activity is doing it consciously, doing it with seichel, that it's worked out. And this is foreign to the way we normally think, and it's foreign to modern Western psychology and philosophy, certainly of the last 20 or 30 years. And that's just tough luck, but that's how it is. The highest form is Laman Taskilu, that a thing should be done with premeditation. That's the sign of its value. And that's the sign of its genuineness. Why are the legal actions of a Cheresh, Shoyte, a Kotten ignored? A person who is deaf and dumb, a person who is mentally backward, and a child under the age of 13. Why are his legal actions not valid? His mitzvahs are not valid. They don't have the halachic status of a mitzvah. He's potter from the mitzvahs. Why? He can do the action the same as anybody else can do. So because he's deaf and dumb, he can't put on tefillin? Of course he can. Because he's deaf and dumb, he can't keep Shabbos. Because he's deaf and dumb, he can't keep kashrus. He can do all the things. But he can't do it with the taskil. The only thing that will be lacking in his mitzvah is not the spontaneity, not the emotion, not the action. All that will be lacking is the intelligence. And a human action that lacks intelligence behind it, an unintelligent action, is an action which has no place in the Torah. It has no validity in Torah. It's not accepted in Torah. The one precondition for a valid and a genuine action is that it should be taskilu, that it should be with premeditation and with thought. That doesn't mean that it must be with self-consciousness and unnatural. One can think a thing out and then do it naturally. Do it with feeling. Do it with emotion. And in fact, emotion is not the motivator of the action. The emotion is the fruit of the action. By doing an action with thought, then you'll feel emotion. Except that will be deep and genuine emotion. That won't be fake emotion. That will be the real thing. To think something out and then do it. Just imagine the same example that we took earlier. Person comes in that you haven't seen in a long time. So you jump up and, hello, my dear friend, and you put your arms around him. And anybody looking at that will say, oh, how touching. I haven't seen him for such a long time, and look how happy he is to see him. Is he really that happy to see him? And if he is that happy to see him, why does that happiness wear off so quickly? Why does it half an hour later they're already bickering and arguing the way they were when they were together before? What's happened to that tremendous emotion, to that tremendous warmth and that tremendous love? Where's it gone? The answer is, it was never there. It was all a fake, it was all a farce. It was a spontaneous flash in the pan, just something that came, like Bilam's Matrigo Alecha, a flash of inspiration. Who knows where it came from? Maybe from a holy place, maybe from an unholy place. One doesn't know. It doesn't make any difference. But it's not genuine. It's not made by me. It's just something which is acquired all of a sudden. It comes and it goes and it's gone. It hasn't changed me, and it hasn't affected me, and it hasn't been affected by me. You'll have another person. Look, you'll walk into the room and he'll sit down, and he'll think to himself, goodness me, look at this person walking in. What a wonderful person he is. And he'll think to himself a little bit, and he'll contemplate a little bit about how wonderful this person is, and how great he is, and how outstanding he is. What about chesed he is, and what about tzedakah he is, and the things that I know about him. The fact that I haven't seen him for long isn't what's important. What difference does it make? I haven't seen him for long, have seen him for long. That doesn't change his value as a human being. What I'm busy getting excited about, although at that stage it's a sort of intellectual excitement, is about who he is, not about how long I haven't seen him. And then eventually I get out of my seat, and how do I relate to him? I don't know if one throws one's arms around him. I don't know if one gets all excited, but there's kovod, a different emotion, honor. One stands up, one relates to him in a different way, and that remains, that stays, that doesn't disappear half an hour later. Because that's an emotion which is the result of an action and a thought process. It's not an emotion which was the first thing that was there. The emotion that triggers off the action is suspicious, and the emotion is suspicious. But when a thought process is triggered off an action, and an emotion follows, that's not suspicious. That's real, that's genuine. The thought process might be a bad one. The thought process might be a dishonest one. It might be a scheming one. I might think he walks in, my goodness, now here comes that villain, that smiling villain. But what a wealthy smiling villain too. I'd better show him some honor. And off I get from my seat and bow down and rub my nose on the ground and invite him in. That's an action which has been premeditated. It's genuine in the sense that the thought was genuine. It's wicked, but it's genuine wickedness. And so it can be genuine greatness if it's a great thought. But where it's just an emotion, do I know whether the emotion is really one of flattery or the emotion is really one of covet? How am I going to know? It came quickly, it just hit me. First impression. Who can really trust such a first impression and such a first reaction? And so one has the concept of leman taskilu es kol asher tasun, that in everything we do, there needs to be taskilu. There needs to be thought behind it. There needs to be an understanding behind it. I've often given you examples of Gedolei Yisrael, how you can stop them at any time of the day or night. And you can say, why did you do that? He might have just scratched his ear, and you can stop him and say, why did you do that? And he won't just answer a simple answer. It's all worked out. There are bases for it, there are reasons for it. He'll quote you Chazals for it, he'll show you a Sugi of Gemara for it. Everything with reasons. Everything understood. Leman taskilu, there's intellect behind every action. And it doesn't mean necessarily that one has to be a big Talmid Chacham. What is the precondition? And you shall learn and keep the words of this bris. It doesn't say kol. This is one of the few places where it doesn't say all the words of the covenant. This is the bris. It's enough to be involved in the learning and practice of Torah. If one's involved in both those two things in the right kind of proportions, then one changes, one becomes a different human being, one becomes a thinking human being. That's what's important. That's leman taskilu. Every person's knowledge is on a different level, obviously, and they're not always going to be able to trace their actions back to Gemara's. And they don't need to trace their actions back to Gemara's. That's not a requirement of leman taskilu. Leman taskilu means that it is thought out. That if I say to you afterwards, why did you do that? You don't just say, oh, because I got angry. Because I felt happy. Because I just became overcome by grief. You don't answer that way. You answer, there's a reason for it. You worked it out. It was thought out. You know what you were doing. You can take responsibility for what you did. And you can explain to yourself or to God or to whoever you want to what you did and why you did it. That's leman taskilu. It's your own thought process, which might be correct and might be mistaken. If you've made a mistake in your thought process, it's easy to correct. You made a mistake. This is where the mistake is. You thought that 1 and 1 is 3 and you're wrong. 1 and 1 is 2. Well, now you understand. You won't make the mistake again. But if you're playing with false emotions, how would you ever know that they were false? How will you ever know that they were mistaken? The Yerushalmi actually translates this with a little subtle difference. And you should learn and keep the Torah. Min biglal detit bonenun. So that you should be misbonen. Firstly, he uses the word hisbonenus. Hisbonenus is a wonderful word. I don't know if it really has an English counterpart. It comes from the word bina, which we've been discussing in the Shalashur Ashir over several weeks. Bina, that ability to deduce one thing from another, to notice that the little points, the finesse, and it's the reflexive form, lehitbonein, to be contemplative, to contemplate, to think something out. It means it's an inward kind of thought processing, to be misbonein. And to be misboinen, what? Yes, kol ma'ad misabdin. It transfers it into the passive. Not that you should be intelligent in all that you do, but that you should be intelligent in all that is done. And that opens our whole scope of human emotion and experience. Because you get emotional only about things that touch you. But you can become thoughtful and contemplative about things that don't touch you as well. And the mitzvah of leman taskilu is biglal that is boinunun yaskul ma'adim isabdin, that you should become contemplative and analytical of everything which occurs. You should become thoughtful. There's nothing in the world which is a coincidence. There's nothing in the world which just happened. And there's nothing in the world which doesn't affect you and which isn't of concern to you. So everything is worthy of a bit of study and a little bit of analysis to try and figure out what it's all about, where it came from and where it's leading to. And how do you achieve that? It's a type of human being. It's the human being who is Ushmartim is Divya Abris Hazois Fasti Semoisam. A man who understands that he has to be learning and keeping. The two have to go together. The philosopher, he's never getting. The philosopher, when he's busy philosophizing, philosophy is one of his actions. The rest of his life has nothing to do with his philosophy. A man who does mitzvahs, but isn't involved in the process of learning, of analyzing, of understanding, of deepening. A man who's not using his mind in connection with those very mitzvahs which he does, with those very actions which he performs, is again a man who does, but it's not leman taskil. What's going to motivate him to do? Fear. One emotion or another, fear of punishment, desire for reward, the way he was brought up, memories of his parents. There'll be one emotion or another that are going to motivate him and push him to do the things that he does. And are those emotions going to be genuine? Or is he going to be acting around at the time? Is he at that time Richard Burton or is he Hamlet? He doesn't know. Nor does anybody else. It's not possible to know. A man who does the mitzvahs, they might all be mitzvahs. Wonderful things that he does. And you say to him, why do you do it? You do it because it says in the Torah you must do it. Are you a thinking man? Is there seichel behind what you're doing? Do you understand what you're doing? Have you analyzed what you're doing at all? No. Are you studying the Torah? No. Are you attending shiurim? No, once a week. I go to a shiur. So why are you keeping all those mitzvahs? It can't be that your once a week shiur is giving you enough understanding to keep you going on all the mitzvahs. That can't be. So you're keeping the mitzvahs for emotions. And where do those emotions come from? Are they genuine or are they fake? We don't know. We'll never know. We'll know after 120 years, we'll know. Before then, you cannot know. But if there's a little bit of understanding as well, and one's actions have intelligence behind them, if they're the actions of intelligent, thinking beings, and I do it because it's right, and because this is how I've analyzed it, and this is how I understand it to the best of my ability, that's a different thing altogether. That analysis is genuine, that understanding is genuine, that is you. That can't be anybody else. That's not just acquired. You can't acquire thoughts. You can't acquire chidushim. You can't acquire new angles of understanding. You can acquire rote actions and you can acquire emotions. But you cannot acquire the process of being a thinking person that you have to become. It has to be you. You can't change. You can't just chap it from somewhere and apply it. And that's what the Torah wants to achieve. Leman taskilu, that you should become a thinking person. Not just that you think in the base of Medrash, but as kol asher tasun, kol ma'adam is abdin. Whatever you hear about, whatever news you happen to hear, the newspaper that you read, the journals that you read, the people that you meet, the situations that you encounter, the things that you do, in all of that, leman taskilu, beglaudet is boinanun. That there should be itbonanut, that there should be contemplation, understanding, analysis. That's what a Jew is. That's what a frum Jew is. And that's what makes one person different from the other. Because each of us will achieve analyses and understandings that differ one from another. In emotions, we don't differ from one from another. We all respond pretty similarly to the same dramatic events. In thoughts, we differ. In analysis, we differ. In understanding, we differ. And it is part of the integrity of living to live according to our understandings, to live according to our analyses, to live according to our thought processes, as far as we're capable to and as far as we're able to do. And then we understand that it's not the emotion that sets off the action, it's the thought, and all the mitzvos for him are full of it, and I've never understood them fully. But it's the seichel, it's the intelligence which has to set off the action. The action has to be determined by intelligence, by nothing else. And it's the intelligence and the action together which produce the emotion. The emotion is the fruit. The emotion is the benefits of the action, not the cause of the action. The emotion is that feeling of kedusha which comes with doing a mitzvah. It's not the feeling which made you do the mitzvah. What made you do the mitzvah was the thought process and the knowledge that it is the right thing to do. That's why I did it. And I did it with as much understanding as I'm capable of. And the consequent feeling is a feeling of kedusha, a feeling of holiness which is able to get us so far. And now we can understand the threat and the fear expressed by Yeshayahu. Yirasom oisi mitzvah hanoshi milumoda, that their fear of me, their very deepest emotions of Yerushalayim, what emotion is there deeper than Yerushalayim? But even that can be mitzvah anoshi melumoda. And when you've got that, the Ribbono Shelolam has to become so destructive. And what does he do? Says the Medrash, he takes away the chokhmah of the chachomim and the bina of the nevonim. Mido keneged mido. Your emotions are false. Your emotions are rote and acquired because they lack intellect. And if they lack intellect, that means that you're not using your chachomim. That means you're not using your wise people. It means you're not using your nevoinim. Mido keneged mido, measure for measure, the Ribbono Shelolam therefore responds by removing those chachomim, by removing those nevoinim. They no longer play a part in the life that one is living. And it's a very sad thing when one looks at very recent times, the last couple of years, how many of our great people we have lost. How many of even the young ones among them. How many of our great Talmidei Chachomim of the present generation have been lost? It was said that when one of the first ones of this generation died only a few years ago, Rav Shach mentioned in his Hesped that he was taken away because this generation doesn't appreciate that kind of knowledge and that kind of analysis and that kind of wisdom. We're all in it for kicks, we're all in it for entertainment. You know, there's Shiurim and there's Shiurim. There's a shiur which is emotionally stimulating. It creates an emotion. That's what we want. That's what we like. Gives us a kick. And there's a shiur which makes us think, which we don't like all that much because it requires a lot of effort. It requires preparation. It requires revision because thinking is not something that can be turned on and off. You are either a thinking person or you're not a thinking person. And it's not to do with how you're made. We're all made thinking people. The Ribbono Shel Olam made us all thinking people. But we're either spending a lot of our time thinking. When we're in business, we're thinking about how to do it right, how to do it correctly, how to do it to the Kiddush Hashem, how to do it efficiently, how to do it competently. It's thinking. We don't just get into routines. And when we come home, we're thinking. And when we lie down to sleep, we're thinking. When we wake up in the morning, we're thinking. All the time, thinking. Such a person, a thinking person, can come to a thinking shiur, and he prepares for it, and he revises for it, and the shiur is just part of his whole day. It doesn't require getting into and getting out of. A non-thinking shiur? That's something else. One can't prepare a person expect a person to put any kind of efforts into it. And we're after that kind of entertainment. The shiur has to be a thrill. It has to be all laid out in a way that all you have to do is listen, sit back and admire its beauty or admire its brilliance or whatever it is. That's not what a shiur is for. A shiur is to push you along, to make you think and to tempt you and to push you and to tease you into going through the thought process yourself. But that needs a change in human being. That needs a different kind of people. A man taskilu. There has to be thinking in everything that one does to be able to do that. One has to become a thinking person. And many of those Talmidei Chachomim who have passed away are people who were outstanding and who excelled in that type of education and that type of thinking process. That's the Mida Keneged Mida. That when we become very emotionally orientated, that what we want out of Yiddishkeit is the emotions, what we're prepared to give it is the emotions, our only test of its genuineness and of its authenticity is the emotions, and that's where the whole thing stops. Then the Ribbono Shel Olam says, look, you don't want the Chochmah, he removes the Chochmah. And the Chachomim and the Nevoinim are taken away. And that for the Ribbono Shel Olam is harder, says the Medrash, than all the 98 klolos of the Sedra, plus the destruction of the Temple. To remove the Chochmah, to remove the wisdom and the thoughtfulness of living, is worse than all these curses, and worse than destroying the Beis HaMikdash. But unfortunately, it has to be done when the people are not utilizing it. And hopefully the opposite applies too. That if we start to become contemplative people, particularly at this type of time of the year, if we start becoming people who demand of ourselves and of one another, and of our teachers and of our systems, thoughtfulness and thinking, and our whole life orientation becomes revolved around thinking and understanding and seeing more deeply into what's happening around us. Well, funny things are going on. The gold price goes up $50 in one day. That's just a simon. That's just a sign that there are funny things happening. One needs to try and understand them. One needs to try and know what's happening in the world. Is it serious? Isn't it serious? How does it affect me? How does it affect Klal Yisrael?
Does one have to make provisions for the future because of it? Does one have to worry? Doesn't one have to worry? One has to think. And don't let the newspapers do your analyses for you, because they can't. They're not thinking people. They're not trained that way. The journalists aren't thinking people. The professionals aren't thinking people. They're technicians. It's only a Ben Torah, really, in modern society. Perhaps in the old days, there were still secular people who had been trained to think. There were days when one went to university to be taught how to think. And one used to study Latin, and one used to study Greek, and one used to study mathematics in order to learn how to think. But today that doesn't apply anymore. Now one's at university just to acquire skills. And so we don't have thinking people today, very few. So don't sit and let your newspapers do your thinking and your experts do your thinking for you. The thinking is the one thing for which you are responsible. The Ribbono Shel Olam holds you responsible for the conclusions you draw from your own thinking. And in the tumultuous times in which we live in, thinking is becoming ever more important, to have your own thoughts and your own understandings of the situations in which you find themselves. Even if they're wrong. If they're wrong, you'll correct them as time goes on, but at least you're thinking. If you're not thinking, you'll never get to the right conclusions and you'll never get to the right understandings. In all that we do, l'man taskilu b'chol asher ta'asu, that there should be thought, that there should be intelligence, and there should be intellect. B'chol asher ta'asu, in all that you do, and as the Yerushalmi explains, b'chol asher is avdun, in everything which is done.